Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to take a bite out of the competition? Are you looking for ideas to make your business better? Welcome to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.
Sponsored by Apple Capital Group.
At the core of every successful business, you'll find people making a difference. And with each episode of the Core Business Show, we talk with those people, examine those ideas, and explore the strategies that make them special. Now, the host of the Core Business Show, Tim Jacquet.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Core Business Show. This is Tim Jacquet, your host, managing, financing, and marketing small business and startup on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Today, I have the pleasure of having Robert. Last name is Machetic. He is a financial planner, investment expert, author on retirement and investing. If you'd like to speak with him, you can call at 347-324-3460. 347-324-3460. Again, or you can post your question in the chat room, or you can Twitter at hashtag. Robert, welcome to the program.
It's great to be here.
Great. How to survive retirement. I mean, that is a storm to itself. Across the board, you know, a lot of people start to retire for the last 5 years. I mean, they lost half their portfolios and on and on. And your book talks about the steps of how to the process preparing for retirement and what the process of retirement. To begin with, let's talk about yourself. How did you get started and what inspired you to write the book?
I've been advising clients for about 25 years. I got an MBA in finance, worked in the corporate world a bit, and then went into personal financial advisory services and investment management. And what I noticed over the last probably 4 or 5 years, I started writing the book after the crash in 2008, is that a lot of my clients just really were almost delusional as far as what they needed for retirement. People would come in with maybe $50,000 or $70,000 at age 58 and say they want to retire. They want to retire on $30,000 a year, and the numbers just don't work. And people did lose a lot in their 401ks. Their homes went down. And I think what's happening are people are just beginning to wake up to go, gee, what is this retirement and what the heck should I do? So part of that, or answering that question, was to write a book and saying, here's the reality. The country's up to its eyeballs in debt. You're not going to get an employer pension, at least most people aren't, unless you work for government. Or you worked long-term for one company, and Social Security basically just gives you a level of income at poverty level, and you have to rely on your savings, and a lot of people just weren't prepared.
Wow. Kind of tell us what is the, if you don't mind, what is a pension, what is a 401k, and what's the difference between those two?
Well, pensions, what happened more originally probably came into place in the U.S. mostly after World War II, and part of what the social compact between business workers and the government was that big corporations would provide a steady income after people would work for that, for the company, for their lifetime. And then when they hit 65 or so, the company would give them a monthly benefit for the rest of their lives that they couldn't outlive. So for the employee, if you just stayed with the company, did your job, you got out, you then got this paycheck for the rest of your life. And what businesses figured out in the 1980s was that promise was very, very expensive. So they stopped that and they switched to something called a 401k plan, which meant they just set money aside for you, but not a monthly promise benefit. So this shifted investment risk to the individual, and there were much cheaper plans. So the employee didn't have the ability to save enough money, and what they're finding out now is people are retiring with their 401ks. They don't have a promised monthly benefit for the rest of their life. They just have a chunk of cash that they have to figure out how to manage. And so this has shifted a lot of risk to all of us. Did that seem to answer your question?
The first thing they should do.
I missed the first part of your question.
You know, the person who gets 50,000, some people gets 50. I mean, some gets people, like you mentioned, got 50,000. Some person would get $200,000. What would be the first thing they should do if they really, in any late 50s, they come to planning retirement?
Well, the first thing that is very important, which people don't do as well as they should, is to understand their expenses, how much it's going to cost you to live in retirement. And a lot of people might be walking around thinking, well, gee, it costs me $3,000 a month or $4,000 a month to live. But you're going to need to understand that broken down into categories such as housing, transportation, entertainment, because once you can figure out your expenses, that's only when you can figure out how much income you need. And if your expenses are a lot more than your income, then you've got a couple of choices. You either lower your lifestyle or you work longer. And a lot of people just don't go through this exercise soon enough. And so the thing is if you're younger than 55, you got to get started on this stuff much earlier in life. If you are in your 50s or later, then you really need to get a good handle on your expenses and get realistic of the kind of lifestyle you're going to be able to live once you stop working.
Wow. Is there a certain cutoff period that, you know, this person will receive a lump sum, been with the company for 30 years, and they get $200,000 or $300,000? You know, if it's burning in their hands, and the first thing they want to go do is buy the stuff they've never been able to buy, do you advise against that?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's really simple, but some people will just go and just go buy stuff. And not really think the long-term impact, hey, I'm going to be living for the next 40 years. I need to sit down with a planner.
If you don't have the personal discipline, then you definitely need somebody who can guide you and stop you from those type of impulses. This needs to be understood that this is what's replacing your paycheck, and this is something that's going to have to last for 20 to 30 years in retirement. If you go out and make big expenses up front, then obviously you have less money in the future. And what you need to put in your head is, am I going to put my future, my older years, at risk for a little bit of diversionary pleasure today? And that's something that you absolutely have to avoid doing. And you need to get your mind set that saying, here is money, and it's going to provide a certain amount of income each month, and that's the purpose of that money, and that's what that money will do.
Wow. What are the scenarios, some of the five steps that you would normally go through in taking the person in that particular process about your book?
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to get across into a certain degree is that retirement's about more than just money. And so obviously that's the biggest concern that everybody has, and all the financial service companies, everybody's saying about saving money and investing and all that, and that's where the financial service companies make their money. They want you to do that. But if you're so obsessed on money, what happens is you miss out of the important things of the last part of your life. And so the process is, in a sense, first to kind of figure out what you want to do personally. Are there things you want to accomplish? Where do you want to live? How do you want your legacy to play out? What is the purpose of your overall life, and how are you going to enjoy these years? Another step is, who are you going to be with? You need a social life. What happens if people start to get isolated and alone as they get in their 70s? They tend to die much younger, so you need to be connected to people. You need to figure out how much that's going to cost, so you should either figure that out yourself or work with somebody. And now you have the lifestyle side, and then you match that with your savings and investments to bring in the income side. Then you need to evaluate things and just keep that in balance, and that's going to be a new skill retirees are going to need to learn, is that for the baby boomers and following generations, retirement's going to be very, very different than their parents. Going to be a lot more volatile, and they're going to be required to have much better money management skills than their parents did.
Wow. When it comes to, I have a question here regarding lump sum distribution going through insurance. Should a person kind of consider that then versus going to Merrill Lynch and sit down and go with an investment advisor or put it into a life insurance plan. I think that's what he's trying to say. I know there are certain life insurance products you can just buy and you can put a lump sum in there and take care of your death benefit and so forth. Is that a real good option?
I would generally say no. Mostly what you got a couple of things that are going on. One is that if you have a lump sum option when you leave your employer, you need to be careful with it because there's going to be a lot of the insurance salesmen and, as you said, the Merrill Lynches and everybody else is going to want to get a piece of that action, and they're going to provide whatever advice it is, and it's not necessarily going to be objective. So you need to be a shrewd consumer and make sure whoever you're working with, you understand where they're getting paid and if they have conflicts of interest. Now, when you're getting ready to retire, your top priority is to be able to have access to that money and get income off of it. So having a death benefit or something that's available after you die is much less important when you're retired. If you have young kids, then that, you know, that may be something to consider. But at retirement, if you go into an insurance product, it's loaded with a lot of costs. The other thing that you'll get pressured with is to buy an annuity, which might pay you a monthly income for your life, but those are based on current interest rates, and current interest rates are historically low, and you'll be locked into that thing for life, and you're going to get eaten up by inflation in the long term. So if you take the lump sum, you need to just develop a very conservative investment plan and get your income off of it to supplement Social Security and whatever else you're getting.
How can you pick an advisor you think that's going to be working in your best interest? I know we can read your book and try to get some idea, but what they really should be looking for out of that person?
I think what you're wanting is a couple of things. One is ultimately it needs to be somebody that you're going to trust. So you need to be able to have some ways of being able to develop a trusting relationship. You might start with referrals. But the key thing that's important is to understand how this person gets paid. Are they getting paid by commissions? Are they getting paid by fees? Are they getting paid as a percent of what you have to invest? Then you'll understand where their conflicts of interest are and whether or not they will give you objective advice. So that's the key thing, is to find out their level of objectivity and where they get paid. And then in a number of relationships, as you just might test them with trust for a while. Don't give them all the money. Go to them and understand what their plan is. Most advisors will give you a 1 hour or at least a first meeting free of charge. Go out and talk to three different ones and see what they propose for you, and then just try to make some assessment of who you think is a good, honest person. And that's a tough spot because there are some undesirables in the business, unfortunately.
Wow. We talk about references, and it can vary because you don't know if they give you all their best references, that they build a relationship. You know, how can you avoid the Stanfords and the Madoffs? I mean, they really, really talk magic, and they lure you in, and you don't know. I mean, maybe some protections you have now that's in place, but you really won't know until they can give you statements. I mean, they're real. The well-known companies, of course, they're going to be above board, but a lot of the independents, you really don't know. Is there an association they can say, hey, this is what they need to belong to if they do some retirement planning? For example, you have those who certify for life insurance, those who certify for financial planning. She always goes to that designation. Is they certified by a particular industry to kind of hold them accountable?
Well, that's only shows that they have the minimum of requirements, so you would need to do that. If you're going with somebody for investments, then you can go to the Security Exchange, the SEC.gov, and you can put in that person's name and find out if there's been any complaints against them or if they've been charged with anything. Similarly, with you're going to have a state regulator who's also these people are going to have to register with the state so you can find out if there's complaints against them. And then there's a self-regulatory agency, which is called FINRA, F-I-N-R-A, which is an oversight, and they keep track of all brokers and all that. So that would be the first thing you should check to make sure that this person doesn't have a lot of complaints against him, criminal charges and all that. The next thing that is a little trickier is this, just because you have a well-known company doesn't mean you're not going to get abused. Merrill and some of these other people get sued all the time because these brokers are basically salesmen, and they get rewarded in their company by selling products, not necessarily taking care of you, the client. So you can be sold stuff that's either not suitable or just as high commission products. So you need to understand what, again, the people are going to be making, how much they're going to make off you on this investment stuff, which I think is a fair question to ask them. We might feel uncomfortable, just like when we're talking to our doctor, if the doctor says something, we kind of just maybe just go along with it, but you need, in these days, to challenge a doctor to say, do I really need these tests? And if you have an advisor who's telling you to buy some real estate deal, then I think it's straightforward to ask them, well, how much are you going to make on this deal? Now, the deal with the Sanfords and the Madoffs, where most of the criminality comes in, is that these people have control over your money. And what is important, especially if you're working with the independents, is that there is a separate company that serves as the custodian of your assets. That's the person who actually has physical control over your assets, which should be separate from your advisor. So the custodians could be like Schwab or Fidelity or Pershing, these other big companies, and they then have an obligation to the client. The financial advisor works with them but doesn't have control over the money. The next thing is never write a check out from your investments to your advisor. So if you come in with your $300,000 rollover, don't write a check to $300 to Bob's Financial Planning Services, because that's another sign that this guy then can commingle that money with his money. And statements sometimes are forged. It's easy with computer software now to create phony statements. And that's why you need this third-party custodian who then keeps everybody honest. So that's what they would need to look for.
Okay. Can we really count on Social Security and Medicare? I mean, they're solvent now, and, you know, 15 years from now is going to be kind of a scary fact, for especially the ones who are in their 30s and 40s now, or the ones who are definitely in their 40s. Do you think it's going to be around?
In some version, I would think what's going to be hard is the country has so much debt at the moment, and we're still checking on $1 trillion a year. Nobody's dealing with this thing up front. If I were younger people, or what we're doing with younger people is probably taking about half the value of their Social Security and using that in for planning, the likelihood they'll get a similar benefit of what's being done now is suspect. So it's probably better if you're younger to plan on saving more, and if it's there when you get close to retirement, then you know, then you're better off, as opposed to not saving enough for it. For the bigger issue is going to be for those who are retiring now, whether or not the Social Security will actually be able to maintain the benefit level for 20 to 30 years. Social Security basically is already running negative, running deficits each year. There's supposedly a Social Security trust fund that was to accumulate surpluses, but all that money's already been spent by Congress. So that means now Social Security is being paid for by deficit financing. Medicare is a whole other thing. It's basically a bankrupt system. Everything in our country, medical care, as we're seeing today, is just crazy. I think if you're going into retirement, what we're looking at is probably planning on, at least in today's dollars, about $1,000 a month to be set aside for medical insurance and other out-of-pocket costs. So that gets to be eating up almost half your Social Security.
Wow.
You can see it's getting pretty complicated as you go into retirement.
So it's because Congress is not addressing it. I mean, that we're just, as a country, just spending ourselves, no, not to the bankrupt, but you spend ourselves into the grave. It's just they just refuse just to address it, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's politically difficult because there's very few options as far as how they want to deal with it. And we've got such a divided government that nobody can do anything. When Bush tried to approach Social Security reform after he got reelected, the Democrats basically just said, there's no way we're touching this thing, and they killed it. So there was an attempt to try to address it, and the Democrats said, no way. And from the Democrat side, Social Security is FDR. That's their holy grail, and they don't want anybody to touch it. They don't want to privatize it. They don't really want to change it. All they want to do is figure out they're just running deficits because nobody wants to make any changes because you're going to have to take something from somebody. And the politicians just don't want to do that. And the similar thing with Medicare is it's highly subsidized, but it's a bankrupt system. And until we get some leadership and courage in Washington, this is just going to be a mess.
What do you think about the health care and play a part of this financial retirement? What's your opinion about that? Is it a viable, I mean, that if a person wouldn't have to worry about health care as they age, then it's kind of a no-brainer. But do you think it's really realistic to have something in a free economy like ours to have a system like that?
Well, even if Medicare works the way it's supposed to, it still doesn't adequately pay the fees the providers want. So what is Medicare and the government comes in, the only thing the government can do is either ration care, which is to say, no, we're not going to let this 80-year-old get hip surgery, or they're going to tell the surgeons, we're not going to pay you very much money. And so what happens are then the hospitals and doctors are saying, well, if you're not going to pay me enough to cover my costs, I'm not going to do the business. And so what people almost have to do now is, even if you have Medicare, it's almost critical that you buy a Medicare supplement program, insurance rather, to cover all the things Medicare doesn't cover and to make sure you can get treatment. So the key thing is going to be having some kind of supplemental health insurance to make sure that you will get treated. Otherwise, you just may end up in a long line or you might just be denied care.
Well, how much a person should save? I know you answered this at the top of the question, that you have to really look at your expenses and go from there, but how much a person really should plan on saving per month? Or is it percentage of the income for that long term? If they're making $40,000 a year, should they, you know, at least save $2,000 or, you know, 10% or 1% or?
Well, I think what you want to do, especially if you're younger, the one thing is to fully appreciate it and get your calculator out here and just watch how numbers go crazy when you compound. The big, which isn't a secret, the thing that people don't appreciate is just that when you take even small amounts of money and you compound it over long periods of time, like 20 or 30 years, so if you're 30 years old and you're going to be working for 35 years, money you set aside today compounding for 35 years becomes huge. If you just take a simple example of like $100 a month over a 25-year period, that $100 a month could grow to $40,000 by the time you get ready to retire, just at about a 4% per year return. So it's important that you start early. And then if you're younger, considering what's happening with Social Security and Medicare, you should be saving somewhere between 12 and 15% of your pay if you're going to want to be able to maintain your lifestyle once you retire.
Okay. What do you think of many people?
I think we broke up, or the connection seems to be lost.
Rob, are you still there?
Yeah, I think our connection got disrupted.
Okay, give me 1 second. Anything else you would like to close with talking about your book?
Well, my book is How to Survive the Coming Retirement Storm, A Five-Step Process for Success in Volatile Times.
Mm-hmm.
My website's www.robertmargetic.com. And I think the key takeaway for people in the audience is that you're going to have to up your skills on financial management, on investment management, and understanding how you spend money. And more responsibility is going to shift to you. And what's going to happen is that there's going to be more uncertainty and volatility. Costs are going to shift to you, like increased Medicare costs. Income might go down, like Social Security. We're probably going to be moving into an inflationary period. So all these changes are constantly going to be swirling around. And so once you retire, it's not one and done. You're not finished once you're retired. Now you need the skills to manage your affairs without a paycheck for 20 to 30 years. And as you're younger, this is the time to start to build that skill set and create a new mindset of how to approach retirement. And then you can manage it. It will give you a sense of control over your retirement.
Wow. Are there any last words for advice if a person who is in their 40s and 50s, what they should be doing in order to take care of themselves for the next 50 years?
Well, the first thing is to save as much as you can. And then the next thing is to really, again, go through your expenses and figure out what it is that's costing you for your lifestyle. And if the numbers don't work, you might have to consider moving. But the key thing is understanding your expenses and being able to answer the question, if I have to cut 10% of my expenses, how will I do it? And you should be doing that at the beginning of each year. And so it's going to be, I wish there was a simple magic answer, but it isn't. It's something that you're just going to have to stay with and keep things in balance over your lifetime. So learn the basic skills, stay on top of things, check your investments, check your expenses, double check whoever is advising you. And then you just do that on a monthly basis, and all of a sudden it becomes just like, you know, simple maintenance around the house. It doesn't have to take a lot of time, but you have to pay attention.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it. So how can they get your book again?
They can go to the website, www.robertmargetic.com. It's also available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the e-tailers. Most bookstores carry it. If not, they can order it and get it for you in a day or two.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on the program. Really appreciate it. A lot of helpful advice for those who's getting ready to retire and those who need to plan for their retirement. Robert, thank you so much for coming on.
Great. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Take care. This has been another production of Apple Capital Group, sponsor of the Core Business Show. You can download this episode on iTunes or on podcasts on Blog Talk Radio. Thank you for listening to the program. I'm Tim Jacquet, your host. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet. For a free quote on equipment leasing and financing, visit our website, applecapitalgroup.com. That's applecapitalgroup.com. And fill out the information to receive your free quote. We hope you'll join us for our next episode. And remember, you can always get to the core via iTunes. You'll find all our previous episodes there. Thanks again for listening to the Core Business Show with Tim Jacquet.